From the Windows, Doors, and More Studios, your one-stop shop for all your kitchen and bath needs. The Pat Miller Program. WoWo, 92.3 FM and 1190 AM. Depend on it.
And we're back. Glad you guys are with us here as we roll into the second hour of the Pat Miller Program here on this Saturday. Very glad that you're with us. A lot of you are writing me saying, hey, we want you to know, even though with all the programming changes, we're there with you on Saturday. That means a great deal. I was at two public outings this week, one a debate, one a forum for the 3rd District. So many of you came up and just said, you know, we want you to know we haven't forgotten you. I think it's important that you know that we haven't forgotten you either, and that's really what it is. Whether I'm doing 5 days a week or one day a week, the fact that you and I can connect, that's what matters. And because of that, I've got our guy that we always have on every week, if possible, Philip Wegman from Real Clear Politics. Philip, happy Saturday to you.
Happy Saturday, and Pat Miller is whoa.
That's a little farther than I would go. That's just between you and me. Pat Miller is whoa. I'm sorry, Pat Miller caught what? Yeah. So a lot of things going on in and around D.C. You know, I keep hearing things. Now, just tell me if I'm wrong, because you being in the whole enclave that is Washington, D.C., you hear things before I do. Am I starting to hear the speaker's name again, much like we heard the previous speaker's name and the one before him? Are there some people on the Republican side that are going to start calling for his head?
Mm-hmm. The past isn't dead. It's not even the past. That's kind of the way to sum up what's happening on Capitol Hill currently. You've got Speaker Mike Johnson, who controls one half of one third of government by just one vote when it comes down to it. And he is the head of negotiations for the Republican Party and all of their doings with the White House and with the Senate, because the red wave did not materialize in 2022. And given his limited cards there are some Republicans who are really frustrated that he hasn't pressed his advantage more with the White House, that he hasn't bent their will to his on these spending bills, on border security, on funding for Ukraine. And now it's not just the sort of grumbling that you constantly hear. Instead, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene has introduced a motion to vacate and call a vote on Speaker Johnson. Now, she hasn't privileged that just yet, but if she were to privilege it, basically this parliamentary red flag, it would call a snap vote on who the Speaker of the House is going to be, and that would return Congress to the chaos that we saw last October when Kevin McCarthy, the previous House Speaker,
right,
was ousted in a very similar manner.
You know, Kevin McCarthy's name is also coming up. It seems to me, in a lot of things that I'm seeing, hearing, and reading, that Kevin McCarthy and the PACs with which he's involved is trying to insert himself a little bit into the fight over what we call Indiana's 3rd Congressional District. And I'm just going to be real candid with you. I don't think he needs to be doing that. In fact, he just needs to sit out. But he's going to he's going to mess us up if he's not real careful.
Well, that's really interesting, because it kind of gets to what McCarthy was good at. And I'm not familiar with what he's doing with his leadership pack in Indiana's 3rd District. I'd lean on you for those particulars. But the thing that made McCarthy different is that he was an excellent fundraiser, and he was able to get Republicans moving in the same direction. The California Republican, he was never thought of as a conservative. He was much more centrist, but his ability was really in raising a lot of money,
right,
getting Republicans together and winning. And so the question here now with Johnson, who is absolutely a product of the right, he is very much a conservative, is can he corral all of these Republicans? Tell them that they're not going to get everything that they want, but keep them together long enough so that they can win in the midterm elections. I think that's a really interesting contrast.
Yeah, no, that is a contrast. It's just like up until everything that went on previously with Speaker McCarthy, to unseat a Speaker of the House was almost, we haven't done this in 80 years. We haven't done this in 100 years. And now it's like we're doing it every 14 weeks. It's like there's somebody who says, well, we put out the last one, we'll just put out this one. That's playing around with the seating chart for a Congress, which makes me highly uncomfortable, whether I like the speaker or not. I just think that makes you look totally unstable.
Well, and I think that it's easy to look at someone like Nancy Pelosi, who was Speaker of the House for some time and who really ruled that institution with an iron fist, and think that these folks are immovable. But if you look at the Republican side, you'll see a history going back to Newt Gingrich, Hastert, Boehner, Ryan, McCarthy. And the through line is that Republicans have a real problem with authority. They don't like their House speakers. I think that some of this is because Republicans fancy themselves as rugged individualists. But when it comes down to playing as a team, to really trying to get points on the board for your team, especially if that means setting yourself up for another play, then there's a lot of frustration and anger. And we see that with Johnson, who is, no doubt the most conservative Speaker of the House. But, because of circumstance, he doesn't control the Senate or the White House. He has to negotiate and compromise with Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and President Biden. And that makes a lot of these conservatives extremely angry. And when it only takes one member of Congress to put their finger on the trigger and throw us into chaos, that leads to a tinderbox situation on Capitol Hill.
Well, and it does. And when you look at a tinderbox, you're sitting there saying, okay, a tinderbox, usually you have to have dry wood, and you want all kinds of stuff inside the tinderbox that's also dry, and then somebody has to be able to flip a match somewhere near that box. It seems like we've got enough players in D.C. now. They're all willing to take a corner of that and say, hey, if you get this, I'll do that, and then we'll do that, and then we'll just blow this all up, and we'll start all over again. I'm telling you, and this is just me talking, I think you know by now, I don't know nearly as much about politics as you do, but in my view, if they keep this nonsense up, especially those on the Republican side, Philip, we're going to go into a midterm election that is a midterm for Congress. You say it's not a midterm, it's a presidential election. This feels like two different races to me. You've got the congressional race, and then you have the White House race. And I am fully confident Donald Trump, if he doesn't stub his toe and if they don't have him in jail on Election Day, he can go in there and he can win what's happening on his race. But the House races and the Senate races, what a nightmare. Mm-hmm. I mean, what an absolute nightmare.
And you're not wrong. I mean, we see President Trump leading President Biden in the Real Clear Politics average. That's something that did not happen in 2020. And again, the 2020 election was incredibly close. Right now, it's a coin flip between those two. But a president is limited, of course, by what they can do in Congress. And so don't think for a minute that Donald Trump is not paying incredibly close attention to what's happening right now in D.C. His most loyal lieutenant, Marjorie Taylor Greene,
right,
is saying that there should not be funding for Ukraine, that the spending bills are much too large, that conservatives really need to throw a wrench in things and achieve limited government. That's also Johnson's goal, but he doesn't have the cards to do it currently. And so what we saw last week is Johnson flew to Mar-a-Lago, and then the two men held a press conference where President Trump kind of extended a lifeline. He said that Johnson was doing a very good job. They agreed to work with each other on a number of different reforms, mm-hmm. including an election integrity option. But, to your point, Pat, this is for Republicans. They want to draw out a contrast of their agenda versus what's happening with Democrats. It's hard to do that when you're when you're cannibalizing yourself.
Well, no, and that's exactly right. Are you sensing anything in and around D.C. that's different this midterm than others? And I know that the midterm seems bigger to us because we don't have 1, 2, 4. We've got 8 people running to replace Jim Banks in the 3rd District. Some of them not as viable as others, but there's 3 or 4 in there that are playing that any of them could end up on the upper crust come election day. And that makes me a little uneasy. Not that my guy's ahead, my guy's not ahead, nothing like that. It's like we can't make up our collective mind, and that bothers me.
So, you know, one thing I'll say about, you know, the third district there is, one, it's my favorite because obviously that's where home is. But I think that, you know, whether you like Banks or you dislike him, the representative has been a serious guy.
Yep.
And there's a lot of very unserious people in Washington, D.C. You know, you see them running to get in front of the camera. And don't get me wrong, Congressman Banks, you know, certainly is on the talk shows often. But more often than not, you know, what this guy is known for is the serious policy work that he did at the Republican Study Committee. He's well-regarded in the conference, you know, because he works hard and he's serious. And so whoever is going to fill his shoes has their work laid out for him, you know, because of what Banks has done in that seat in these last, I think it's three or four terms. You know, he's a serious legislator, and, you know, his replacement, you know, they have to rise to that occasion.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I'll tell you another thing, too, that's catching is you said, you know, Banks is a serious guy. And some people are saying, well, everybody that's in Congress is a serious guy. Not necessarily. You know, I feel like, for example,
not at all.
Yeah, the young ladies and even some not so young that are part of, you know, the whole force coming out, and they are part of the little circle around the representatives from New York and Maine and Minnesota. And, you know, you've got the tribe out there, the squad. They don't – it's like I never know when they open their mouth. They're halfway through their statement before I even begin to understand what playing field we're on. They just grab whatever they want to grab. And with Banks – and first of all, he's not Matt Gaetz. He's not running for a microphone. Okay, if he's on a mic, it's usually because somebody in a rather important show or a network or something has asked him to be part of their conversation. But you know, it's not that he's not looking for the time. He's glad to give it. He's glad to be there. But it's like he's not. You know, I used to say that the most dangerous place to be was between some congressman and a TV camera, because you're liable to get run over, you know, because they want to get their FaceTime. I don't sense that with Banks.
Yeah, I don't sense that with the congressman, and certainly I think he's a leg up there in the Senate primary. But I think that, you know, what we're talking about here is the shifting way things happen in Congress. It used to be that members of Congress would keep their heads down when they were freshmen and
right.
during their second or third terms, and
they would
work through the committee process, rise up that way. And, you know, certainly there are always problems with Congress, and you know, there's not exactly an ideal when you have an institution spending trillions of dollars a year. But, you know, there's a way to do things. You worked your way up the ladder. Now, you know, we see members of Congress not even just running to the cameras, but instead turning on their phones. And through the age of social media, you can have a member of Congress exert tremendous influence through their power of personality. And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and other members of the squad, they absolutely did that, and to great effect. They pushed the Democratic Party and the White House to the left. So, you know, there may be some good things in this, but it also empowers, you know, backbenchers to absolutely throw a wrench in things. And the rules of the game are changing almost daily.
Well, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she made that position known before she even took the oath of office, where the night before she was sworn in during her first term, she was holding some kind of an impromptu presser outside of Nancy Pelosi's office. Here's what we need to do, and the speaker needs to get better about this, and she needs to do that. She hasn't even been inaugurated yet, and she's sitting there slicing and dicing the speaker from her own party. And I'm like, okay, this could be fun to watch, but now it's like everybody's doing it.
And I think that's a really good example, because how did Nancy Pelosi deal with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? She brought her into the fold, and certainly when she was speaker, there were some threats, there were some admonishments. but it was never a question as to who was actually in control, who was running the show. When we look at how Speaker Johnson has dealt with his conservative analog of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, he's not brought the hammer down. He has not threatened her with expulsion from different committees, withholding campaign funds. Instead, it's a much more Democratic situation on the right, and that leads to a more fluid situation with a lot of controversy and perhaps with Speaker Johnson being not long for this world politically.
Yeah, well, and which really is too bad. He is a nice guy. We didn't realize until we read his bio in depth just how conservative he was and a lot of the things that came out of his mouth early. But it's like now he's hampered, and I think he's hampered more by people within his own party than he is from the other side. Listen, Philip, our time is shot. I'm sorry for that, but we'll look forward to having you again next Saturday. Always glad to have you on. Make sure you say hi to your sister for me. I got to thinking, I think it was several years ago on this weekend that I spoke at a Right to Life thing downtown, and I spoke right after her. And after she got done and the place went nuts, I'm like, why am I going out here?
Well, everybody loves Laura. She's the best.
Yep, there you go. She's the best. There you heard it. Hey, listen, thank you so much. We appreciate you. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Pat.
All right, have a great day.
This is the Pat Miller Program on WoWo, 92.3 FM and 1190 AM, and on the WoWo app.
Hey, welcome back. My appreciation for Philip Wegman from Real Clear Politics being with us. Enjoy him every week. Very insightful. And he's always out there digging for the stories. And many times it's the story behind the story. If you have a chance, check out his site. Go to their website there for realclearpolitics.com. That's realclearpolitics.com. Click on authors. Scroll down to Philip Wegman and his articles will come right up. And it's the most recent article in Time first. And then it goes backwards from there. Sometimes when I have an hour to kill, I'll go in and I'll check out 10 or 15 of his articles. And every one of them really gets me going, stifles my mind, gets me back into the realm of understanding what it is I'm doing and why I'm doing it. Philip Wegman. We talked last week about the change in California because of the change in entry-level wages. Call it whatever you want to call it, minimum wage. It's actually an entry-level wage. Well, it's caused a lot of fast food chains to hike their prices, lay off workers, automate their operations, and for some, close some locations. That's what they've done. That's what they've been up against, and that's what a lot of them are doing. But there is one fast food company with their heiress that they don't want to do that. I'm talking about the heiress, Lindsay Snyder, who took over her family's popular burger chain at the young age of 27 back in 2010. Lindsay Snyder is the CEO of In-N-Out Burger. And if you're out there in California, they are huge. I mean, they're in a lot of states besides California, but there's no doubt that's their home and that's where they're doing a lot of their work there in California. Well, today she's 41. She's a billionaire. She's fighting hard to keep her restaurant's costs low after this California-initiated new minimum wage law. Menu prices at a lot of restaurants all over California are soaring in the wake of the minimum hike, but the In-N-Out president said she went toe-to-toe in several high-stakes company meetings to try and keep their menu prices as low as possible. She even had people in her own company fighting with her. Lindsay, we've got to do this. We can't keep living here. She said, I was sitting in VP meetings going toe-to-toe saying we can't raise the prices that much. We can't. She said, I feel such an obligation to look out for our customers. And she was struggling to guide her company through rising inflation and minimum wage costs while trying her best to keep menu prices low and profits up. And the latest jolt in the minimum wage in California has made her position very difficult. They claim that her restaurant was not interested in following in the footsteps of her competitors, most of whom have opted to increase menu prices to make more money. When everybody else was taking these jumps, one of her directors said, we weren't. The new California minimum wage law went into effect on the 1st of April this year. prompting several fast food restaurants to raise their menu prices to fight the new wages, and some of them to change their schedule with their employees, and some of them to even eliminate some employee jobs. It's not a good idea, but that's what she did. She wanted to go toe-to-toe. When Gavin Newsom signed this bill last fall, it requires fast food chains in the state with over 60 nationwide locations to pay workers at least $20 an hour, much higher than the $16 minimum wage for every other industry in the state. In other words, there are still companies in the state of California that their workers make less than the $20 an hour. They're making $16 or less. It's only the fast food. Is that fair? I mean, is that right? Are you so honked off at fast food places you're going to come in and smack them around? Well, fast food customers in California are feeling the pain of the higher prices. One Los Angeles Burger King started charging $16.89 for a double Texas Whopper, which was a 12% increase from $15.09, and the Big Fish Sandwich saw a 53% increase from $7.49 to $11.49. One of Snyder's In-N-Out restaurants in Los Angeles only increased burger prices by 25 cents and drink prices by a nickel. Why? Because she's fighting to keep the prices where they are. They've said no to mobile ordering because that greatly impacts the customer service experience. The thing that they were worried about is if you get a bad delivery place delivering your food to you and they've got their customer service all out of whack and they treat your client like garbage, that affects on In-N-Out because that's where they got that food. When discussing the chain's packaging that features Bible verses, Snyder said, "We're a family company. We're a private company, and this is who we are, and I'm unashamed of my faith." Well, because of that and several other things, and because it seems that Lindsay Snyder has her business acumen screwed on properly on top of her shoulders, I hope all this pans out very, very well for the In-N-Out company. Coming up later in the program, we're going to be talking to 3rd District Congressman Jim Banks. He'll be on at the start of our third hour at 2 o'clock. And also some guests today from the 122nd. Some good friends out there here in town. Maybe you've seen some of the newer jets flying over. I can tell you, we had a visit out there this week, and they are very excited about where they are in military aviation. Back with more straight ahead. Thanks for being with us on this Saturday. Pat Miller here on WOBO 92.3 FM and 1190 AM. Hey, welcome back on this Saturday. Very glad that you're with us, as we always do. And here, as we're starting the second half of our 1 o'clock hour, somebody that we had on several days ago to talk about an event coming up, and I told Tommy then, you need to come back on. And so here she is, Tommy Carden, and she is with Redemption House Ministry talking about their second annual Butterfly Gala. Now, you did your first one last year, went really, really well. Up until recently, were you nervous about doing the second one for fear that you wouldn't have the same momentum?
Hi, Pat. Yes, you know, anytime you have an idea for something and you put a lot of work into making it happen and it turns out to be like exactly what you thought it was going to be and everybody yep. left having a good time,
yep.
it does set the bar really high.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we couldn't be more excited and proud of the mission that we serve at Redemption House. So the fact that the first one went so well, it just seemed right that we continue to raise the bar, that we continue to shine a light on the work being done and the women's lives that are being changed. And the community rallied, and they are supporting us, and they are excited. So there was some pressure, but it's the good kind of pressure.
Yeah,
that makes you show up.
That's a good way of doing that. It was the good kind of pressure. It's not like, man, how are we going to pay that bill? You know,
it's not a fear. It's an inspiration.
There you go. Man, you got to work with encouraging women. But on the flyer I had in the mail, on the flyer that I had in my mailbox, beautiful flyer, by the way, I love the woman's face with the butterfly wings behind her. That is whoever created that for you guys. That is awesome. But when I saw that it was the second, I thought, okay, this is the make or break one, because if you can keep some of the momentum that you had from your first, it will wash into the next one. And it looks like you have, because my understanding is as of last week, you've already sold out 650 tickets.
That is true. Yes, we increased our attendance this year by nearly 30% over last year, and we sold out 2 weeks before the event. So,
wow.
Yeah, I feel like the momentum has been wonderful.
That is just amazing. I think, you know, women, well, men too, but women right now get such a bad rap, and part of it is the abortion fight or this fight or that fight, mm-hmm. you know, and some of them are just in the middle of all that, and they're just trying to be women. And some of them are just trying to be mothers, and some of them are just trying to get through life and get their train somewhat on the tracks so they can keep going here. And this is definitely something that's going to help them do that. Talk to me about your speaker that's going to be coming to be with you.
Actually, we have a really neat part of our event called a Butterfly Showcase Pass. So we don't have a keynote speaker. We actually have four women who have graduated throughout the history of our program and gone on to exhibit continued stability, growth, recovery, and progress in their lives. So we have four incredible ladies who graduated clear back in 2015, 2018, 2019, and 2020.
Wow.
And have remained sober, they've remained stable, they've reunified their families, and this year we actually get to hear from some of their family members.
Oh, is that right?
Three of those women's children, their daughters, are being interviewed about what their mom's journey was like for them. And one of them has her mother on there. This particular young woman, she's in her early 50s. And when she came to Redemption House, she had spent 23 years total in and out of jails and prisons. And we get to hear from her mom talking about how proud she is of her grown adult daughter and the track that she's on and the life that she's built for her. So this year we're really focusing on the impact a recovery journey has on someone's family.
You know, and I know that you know this, but having her mother standing up there without a gun to her head and saying, I am proud of my daughter, here's what's happened, and this is just so amazing. That's going to create a bond between that mom and her daughter that probably could not have happened any other way.
You're right. And it's going to give inspiration to those who are at the very beginning of their recovery journey to see, you know what, it's broken now, the relationships and the connections. But, you know, it, with hard work, consistency and faith, those bonds can be restored and be even stronger than they were before.
Yeah. I don't want this to get away from me. I'm going to tell you this once or twice more. The website is Redemption House FW. For Fort Wayne, redemptionhousefw.org. That's redemptionhousefw.org. I need to tell you that the tickets are all sold for this event, but that doesn't mean your ability to participate and to be an encouragement to these women. That doesn't mean that that is lost. In fact, it's as available as ever. You can go to that at redemptionhousefw.org and you can make your contribution. In fact, Tommy, I think I did mine while you were here in the studio last time. It was so easy to be able to do that. And it's just amazing. And you really feel that you're doing something that's going to make a difference in a lot of lives.
You're right. And that contribution, every one of them, goes towards making change possible for women. You know, it takes a lot of support and encouragement and accountability to learn new skills and to come out of trauma and addiction.
Mm-hmm.
So we have an incredibly dedicated staff. We have beautiful homes. We have all of those wonderful things that you need, those pieces, but they all cost money. And we are not government funded. We receive no federal funding or government funding. We are completely privately funded.
And some people say, well, why don't you want government funding? Because we don't want them telling us what to do.
We are unashamedly faith-based.
Yeah.
Our faith activities are not optional, Pat.
You
will be exposed to the gospel while you're in our program.
Yeah. You know? Warning.
And that's just because that's how change happens.
Yeah. Hey, let me cover one other thing with you, because I know you're having a silent auction, and I know that silent auction goes online tomorrow, right?
Yes, it goes online Friday.
Okay. And so now give me how it is that we can get on there. What time will that go live?
I believe it goes live Friday morning, and we have over 63 items so far. We may get even a few more by the time it goes live. And
okay.
You do not have to be present to win. All bidding is done online, so you may not be able to be in the room with us next Tuesday. But you can still be participating and supporting us online. So
okay.
You can find an item that sounds amazing to you. We have baskets of all kinds. We have experiences. We have services. We have some really cool things that you know, that have been graciously donated to us to help support our mission. You bid online, you increase your bid online, and you'll be notified online that you either won or, you know, came in second place and can still support our ministry.
Yeah, which is just amazing. I mean, look, it's cool. I've done online auctions with other places, you know, the mm-hmm. House for Children out in Woodburn and places like that. And it's cool if you're the one that gets the whole deal. But what I've always done, if I made my bid for $150, but I got outbid, the winner was $160, I let them go ahead and keep my $150 anyway, you know. And somebody says, yeah, but you didn't have anything to show for it. No, I think I did.
You are still making a difference, and that's such a gracious way to look at it, Pat. Thank you for doing that for the organizations that you support.
You know, I tell you one of the things, too, that I found very encouraging is when I went to your site, and, you know, you go to the whole About Us and you go to Our Leadership. Mm-hmm. You're in there, of course, as your picture, because you're the chief bottle washer. But then you go in there, and it's just like line after line after line after line of beautiful women, beautiful inside, outside, and everything. And I think there's even a young man thrown in there somewhere. But they've all got great jobs that they do, and they're in there doing it all the time. And when people call, they might win that gift that they're trying to vie for on the online auction, and they might not. But at the end of the day, they can look at these faces and know they can make a difference in their lives as far as the availability to have fun so they can keep doing their volunteer work. And then the hundreds of women that will be helped through Redemption House over the course of the next year. It really is amazing. Now, I've only got about a minute left, but let me just ask you. Mm-hmm. Now, you founded this in 2012, so you are now in your 12th year. Are you shocked at how effective it has been and how many lives you've touched?
Absolutely. But not because I don't believe that God can do amazing things. It's that He would choose someone like me, who has come through her own recovery journey, to be the one who gets to be at the head of this. And that, to me, is just such an honor and a privilege. I'm astonished at its success, because it's been achieved in spite of me. But I am not surprised at all that God has shown Himself strong, because I am a living example of what He can do with a heart that is surrendered and submitted to Him.
Wow, that
is. So, yeah, I continue 12 years in. 20 years in, it doesn't matter. I continue to be honored to be able to serve in this capacity.
Now, if you're one of the lucky 650 and you've already got your tickets for this coming Tuesday, it goes from 5 to 8 at the Grand Wayne Center, downtown Fort Wayne. Yeah. This is going to truly be, I think, a night to remember. I mean, this is going to be absolutely amazing. And I want you guys to be there for that, and to just go and participate in it and just have a great time. Tommy, I want you to have the greatest time ever. And I wouldn't mind if you're on with me again maybe about a week after, and you could just give me like a 30-second update on just how well it went and just what happened. That would be amazing. And I can't come to the banquet. Because my life is owned by the upcoming midterm elections. But,
Yes, I understand.
But sometime after that, I would love to come by with the lovely Mrs. Miller and just spend just a few minutes walking around through your house there. Would that be okay?
Yeah, I would love that. We'd be honored to have you, Pat. You're welcome anytime.
Thanks so much for being with us. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks. Have a great day.
This is the Pat Miller Program on WoWo 92.3 FM and 1190 AM and at WoWo.com.
Our last segment here on this Saturday in hour number two, Jim Banks comes up in the next hour as our representatives from the 122nd out here at Fort Wayne International Airport. Real quick, we heard so much lately about packing the court. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to pack the court. How are you going to do that? Well, we'll change the laws if we have to, so we can add more justices than we should be allowed to add. You know, people frown on that kind of stuff. I don't know if you guys catch on to that a whole lot, but they do. Well, now, it seems that ever since losing control of the Supreme Court to this nominally conservative majority, a lot of sane liberals who had brazenly called for packing the court are now just as brazenly seeking to unpack the court. Unpack the court. If there was ever proof that the left views the Supreme Court as just another arm of their legislative body to lobby for their agenda. It's their shameless effort to pressure liberal Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor, 69, to retire. And they want her to retire before the presidential election in November so President Joe Biden can nominate a younger and equally more liberal replacement. That's the whole goal. We can't pack the court. There's no time to get that through, so let's unpack it. And they're going to put all kinds of pressure on Sonia Sotomayor to unpack the court. Two leftist law professors are among the loudest voices calling for Sotomayor's resignation. Lucas Powell, a law professor at University of Texas, Austin. I would love to see Sotomayor retire. I would love to trade her for a 50-year-old justice. Why is it that there's been just this habit of hanging on to justices for absolutely as long as they can? This tells me a couple of things. You tell me where I'm wrong. You can write me at 46862. That's 46862. You can text the word WOWO and then put in your question or comment. Or you can write me, Pat Miller, all one word, no dots or dashes, patmiller@wowo.com. If they're looking for this outcome-based adjudication, think outcome-based education, what are you teaching them? Well, we're teaching them whatever we have to do to get to the end result we want. That's wrong. Well, doing the same thing with our judicial system is also wrong. When you're doing this and you're pushing for these hand tricks, you know, like card tricks right at the table where you can see the hands move, when they're pushing for all of that, is that really going to work for them? This adjudication shows, I think, a panic on their side. They really do think the Supreme Court is, if there are more conservative justices on that court, well, then that is a bad court. They view this court now as a bad court. Now, when they were a court that was going with abortion and leftist ideas and all of that, then the Republicans were told to just clasp your hands behind your back and applaud and nod up and down and let this happen because it's going through. The left, I mean, they view an unelected Supreme Court majority, as few as five votes, as a super legislature for enacting their radical agenda, most of which they can't get through Congress. In other words, they can't get anything through Congress if it's not in the vein of what it is that most of America wants. So they can't fight it there, so they'll let it pass, and then they will take it to the Supreme Court, hoping they can yank their Supreme Court justices in alignment to do what they need to do. Now, just as an aside, the same cannot be said of the six moderate and conservative justices who, from time to time, unlike the liberal ones, stray off the reservation and vote with the liberal bloc, much to the consternation of the right. For example, it was an appointee of a Republican president, then Justice Anthony Kennedy, who gave the four lockstep liberals on the court at the time the fifth vote in the Obergefell case. The adjudicated idea is reflected on how Sotomayor and the other two current liberal justices, all appointed by Democrat presidents, vote in utterly predictable lockstep on all of the most controversial and consequential issues that come before them as a court. We need to keep an eye on this. They're going to keep coming back with pushing to pack the court. And if they see that they can't do it, it's out of their reach, be ready to hear that they have an idea for unpacking the court. They want her to resign so that should we get her out of there, Biden could get somebody else nominated before his term ends. Back with more straight ahead. This is Pat Miller here on WOWO 92.3 FM, 1190 AM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.